Mimi Brodsky-Chenfield is an educator and author of Creative Experiences for Young Children and Teaching in the Key of Life, as well as the children's novel The House at 12 Rose Street. She'll be leading the Rife Gallery's June 24th program, New Narratives, Paintings by Ohio Artists, an evening of creative writing inspired by paintings by Ohio artists.
So welcome to the HIS studio and Writer's Talk.
Thank you, Doug. Glad to be here.
Great. Tell me about the Rife Gallery program and how you integrate art and writing.
Oh, the Rife Gallery has a wonderful show. They always have wonderful art shows. But this one in particular, when I went to see the paintings, they're all by Ohio artists, and the ideas narratives. Some of them are more easily accessible than others. But as I was strolling around and admiring the paintings and enjoying them, I was just missing my program that I worked on for many, many years at the Museum of Art with fifth graders, which was a program called Departures, and we integrated the art at the museum with children's writing. And they, we wrote wonderful things, poems and stories and observations. And this went on for years. And so I was mumbling as I walked around and said, oh, these paintings would lend themselves so well. I wish I had my kids again in this program. We would have a great time here. And Mary, who is one of the mothers of the gallery, went, well, let's have an evening of creative writing using the paintings. So that's how that came about. And to me, everything is connections, because you said, how do you do paintings and writing? How do you can integrate them? I think everything's integrated. This is my problem in life. We're in a country that separates everything, and I bring everything together. So I don't see how it's disconnected. You know, you look at a painting, and you can hear music. You look at a painting, and you can smell it. You look at a painting, and words come to you or questions. So, I mean, everything is connected. So I think it's just the most natural thing for writers or people who want to be playing with writing to come in and have their inspiration from the paintings.
So tell me how you got started in teaching or writing. I'm curious. So you see all these connections. It's a natural flow for you, but how did that begin?
Well, this is interesting. I have to figure out how it began, because I've been writing since I'm 9 years old, which is a few years ago. Anyway, and I always wrote, and I started teaching in 1956, and writing was a very big part of every day with the children. So I think I took a few courses at night. Some of them were very rigid. People were just shook up. And I said, this is not the way to teach writing. So I started teaching writing at night. I have a wildly unpublished book called What's So Orange About 2 o'clock, about the ways I have been teaching writing, because I wanted to share, knowing how it's been going with the children in school, and how at fourth or fifth grade, many of them are frozen and fearful. And then how will they get past that, to start working on ways that are reassuring and encouraging and joyful and process oriented as against product, which again is not quite in line with American culture. So basically, over the years, I've been teaching creative writing. I've taught in Hawaii. I've taught at OSU for 10 years at continuing ed when we first moved to Columbus. So I've taught creative writing with part of everything I've done. It's just part of everything.
You know, teaching all those different age groups and everything, what kind of different techniques do you have to bring to it in order to work with them? What is the difference between teaching, say, fourth graders and then teaching it continuing ed for adults?
This is such a good question, Doug. Now, that is a wonderful question. Because, you know, I do a lot of work with creativity and the creative process. And basically, I don't think of, is this good for young kids or is this good? You just triggered a memory. Years and years ago, while I was teaching fourth and fifth grades in New York, I was taking poetry courses at night with a wonderful, wonderful poet, George Abbey. I took many years with him. And he did great things with us. And this is all adults. I get an idea. I go, this is a great idea. I loved it. And the next day I would do with my fourth graders, but put it in their way, put it in a way that they could understand it, not make it as complicated and theory-based. My feeling is, if you like an idea, you make it work for whoever you're working with, whether it's seniors, whether it's preschool. But if you like the idea, then that idea you can play with. So I've always played with, if I like it, if I don't like it, it could be the greatest idea and it could work for you. Like you could teach a class and this is, oh my gosh, and you are excited about it, but I don't see me using it. I like being in it. I like doing it with you. but I'm, say, teaching a group the next day, I don't think I'm going to use that idea so much. I can't see me using it. But if I say, I see that idea and how I can use it, I'll make it fit whoever. It won't be the same. You say, gee, isn't that idea of the sense charts? Right. Well, you just did it with fourth grade, and then you did it with your graduate class in poetry. Yes.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what are some of your favorite exercises then that you've adapted for different groups?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I have so many. As a matter of fact, this book, What's So Orange About 2 o'clock, actually got incorporated. That's a book of creative writing, got incorporated in language arts textbooks I did, which I didn't give you the name of, so that all those creative ideas got in there. So we have a giant section of ideas that you could play with. I have some wonderful ones, like, oh, when I was teaching Upward Bound, I gave them so many fabulous ones. Like, for instance, these are high school kids who were dropout kids who came back and had another chance. And, you know, we did interviews. I said, interview an inanimate object, you know, and they're like, what? This is in the University of Hawaii. And I go out and gave them about 25 minutes, and I'm walking out, and they're on the campus on the, like, oval area. I see this big brute of a guy sitting with a big rock interviewing, yo, rock, you know. But anyway, interviews with, you know, letters to everyone, letters to ancestors, letters to animals, you know, letters to parts of nature, letters to yourself, letters of fun. Sense charts are just awesome. Dialogue exercises. Oh my gosh, I have 100 ways to use the 7 dwarfs. I mean, nonstop, phenomenal, the dialogue using the 7 dwarfs. But the 7 dwarfs, the more you think about the 7 dwarfs, the more you are going to go, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of this before?
They incorporate, because they embody certain things that you want to say, like sleepy.
Right.
Sleepy might not be the best interview, though.
Like, yeah. But sleepy. Even sleepy is a proper noun, and sleepy is an adjective, right? If you can be a sleepy, small s, sleepy, or you can be a grumpy sleepy. I mean, you really have to know what my own children want on my tombstone. They said, Mom, we only want 2 words on your tombstone. Too much. You know, the more you think, I mean, my first rule for creativity is what else? What else? What else? And if you really do what else, you just can't stop. But we're not used to doing that in our country, in our culture. We're used to saying, I want 10 words for spring. Thank you. Doug, excuse me, I did not ask for 11. I asked for 10. But I have my severely gifted here, so you may have 11. I mean, this is how we think. So we shut off instead of just what else, what else. And sometimes the what else's, and even if you grumble about them, go, oh, no, I just thought I did everything, what else? That could be the best thing.
I'm curious, severely gifted?
Yes, severely
that's
gifted.
Interesting.
That's an actual quote.
Take on that, yeah.
Almost everything I say is an actual quote.
Okay, it sounds almost...
These teachers were complaining about a group they had, and they said, a child, and they said, I think he's severely gifted. And I went, this is a problem, right? I'm at this meeting, I go, this is real. I mean, he needs help. He needs help.
He's overly gifted.
He's
painfully gifted.
Right.
You can see that. Tell me about the Departures Program. I know that you've got a book. I think you are some of the people from the Departures Program.
That's right. Well, this program actually is on hold at the museum. Mm-hmm. The museum's in a big transition now anyway, the Museum of Art. But for about 20-something years, I was with it about 20 years. It might have been going about 23 years by the time we finished. It was a consortium between the Columbus Public Schools and the Museum of Art, and that 10 fifth grades a year fed into this program. And we had poets. I was one of the poets. And the docents from the museum were specially trained to work with the kids in more creative ways and more expressive ways. Classroom teachers were in on it. We had 2 poetry visits in the classroom a year. Every year we visited the classroom, did poetry exercises, the docents visit with them. We wrote, they had journals, wonderful journals that they absolutely adored, that they didn't want to part with. And then they each culminated with a morning at the museum with their notebooks. And we just used the museum, that last culminating event, for sketches and for poems and observations. And so this is just an example. And then we collected all the journals and got a sample from every child of either an illustration or a poem based on the art or done in the classroom, in classroom scenes. And it was absolutely glorious. It was glorious. And then we had a celebration, a poetry celebration, poetry and art. And the museum gave us the evening. The whole evening was the children's. Families came. We had poetry festival. Every class had 15 minutes in the auditorium to read samples from their book and refreshments. And it was just one of the great. I see kids all the time. I see adults like, oh, I was in departures. So we had a wonderful time, and every child was celebrated. It wasn't like we'll take the 10 best poems or anything. Every single person that was in the program that year was represented in the end of the year book. So this is just one of the years. This is 2007.
Well, that leads into what I read as one of your favorite quotes, a Yiddish proverb called, that goes something like, all of my children are prodigies. How do you use that when you're teaching writing? How did you use that with departures?
Because first you have to feel it. First, it's not just words. You have to believe that, you can have all the words you want on the wall, like all the great slogans, like just putting that aside. You know, like I did work in the Catholic school, Our Lady of Peace, all over the schools, Our Lady of Peace, and then the kids are fighting. And I'm saying, excuse me, guys, Our Lady of War, oh. So, you know, I mean, you say, welcome, parents, did you sign in? How long will you be here? So welcome has its questionable. So all of my children are prodigies is a proverb that I just love. I love it because it's like a belief in the gifts of everybody. And if you believe that, then that's how you behave. And so I just assume that every person who I'm with and everything I've ever done has just strengthened all my beliefs. I mean, that's why I'm so obnoxious. I mean, really, because everything I say is really true. No question. So it's true. If you believe, and even the toughest kids, like I'll just give an example. This isn't about poetry, but I was in a school yesterday, and I'm in the artist in the school's program, and the oldest kids, the after-school kids came in to be with the little kids, and they're like, they're middle school kids, and they're like, you know,
Very cool.
And the little ones were very excited. So I just happened to have my puppet, my little dog puppet, and I just kind of bring him out at the end. But I said, you know what? I'm going to just bring him out, even though I have these cool. And so I brought him out, and I said, I know you guys are so old. Some of you are so old. But he just wanted to do his trick for you. So I wonder if you could just say, hi, Snowball. And all the kids are going, hi, Snowball. And the big kids are going like, I said, so he put his head down, and I said, gosh, some of you aren't really greeting him. He feels so terrible. Do you think you just give him a little greeting? So these middle school kids, he turned around and went, hi, Snowball. At the end, Snowball kissed everyone. They lined up for kisses. And the teachers were like, we don't believe this. We don't. So it's almost like it's another Yiddish word, chutzpah. You've got to have the guts, the courage, the craziness to just try what you're going to try and hope and pray that it works. But if you pull it back, then nobody's going to have the fun.
Right. Well,
does that make sense?
I teach at OSU. I'm taking a puppet.
Yeah. Oh.
Take a puppet in and they'll kiss everybody. That may cause trouble. Well, the puppet kisses.
That's oh, yeah. Doug, listen, puppets have been around for years and they can make points that, you know, humans sometimes can't make. Mm-hmm. I mean, my puppet Snowball, I've had him for this particular one. I should have brought him. Why didn't I bring him? Shoot. Try it, Doug.
Is Snowball a white dog?
He's a little brown and white puppy dog. Okay. And he's got every germ on him from kisses. And I'll send him to the National Institute of Health when he's done, because he probably has every immunity possibility
he's
on him.
He's helping to spread the swine flu right now. Yeah,
he's helping to cure it.
Okay. What's your measure of success when you're working with writing students? What makes you feel that they've reached the place where they've gotten what you want them to have gotten?
Okay. Oh, that's a good question. let me just, you know, roll back for a second to feed into that. I teach a course every summer at Otterbein called Arts Across the Curriculum. And it's for any grade level, any, you know, age level, subject matter, it doesn't matter, graduate, undergraduate. This is about 20 years now for that course. And it's the greatest course. We have the best fun. It's so much fun, it's illegal. But the first thing and the bottom line is participation. Because once, you know, we have such a product-oriented country that, I mean, you write a poem and it's already, we've got a whole setup now. We are going to publish in your book, you write your first word, the. Oh, Doug, that is a wonderful word. Now, here is your book. Here's your binding. We'll make 10 copies and you can give it out. So it's so product that I think we just throw kids off instead of the joy of the doing. So to me, you know, if you take a dance class, you don't start out with, okay, choreography, we're performance in 2 weeks and we're on stage. I mean, you work out, you loosen up, you know, you do exercises that give you flexibility and, you know, and you see this fun of, I like to move this way. Oh, gee, I'm not into that kind of move. So, I mean, you need the exercise. So to me, the participation in the doing is the greatest success. For everybody feeling free enough to say, I'm going to try this. I'm going to be open. Because otherwise, you're uptight. You're closed up. You're worried. Is this right? Is this right? I mean, we have to undo a lot that's been done to all of us. Mm-hmm. So my measure, quote, of success, I never even think of it. My measure is everybody participating? And is everybody feeling the excitement of the doing? Okay. And that's what we're going to hit in the Rife Center. We're going to try to create that kind of a climate, which will be a challenge for 2 hours. But, you know, we've been doing it for many years. And, of course, you have to offset what some people come with. Some people are coming with, like, you're going to have to work on that.
To get them to share.
Oh, yeah. So, but it's more like reassure. Listen, we are just going to have a blast. So hang loose.
Okay. All right. I'd like to ask a couple of sort of shorter
sure.
questions. What's the best part about being a writer?
Besides the writing? I think the best part of being a writer is your head is always full of openness and curiosity. I mean, you just don't look at anything and just pass it by. You kind of look and go, wow, like what happened there? What happened before that? And this guy looks like a great character. Where is he going? And what could his name be? I mean, it's like you're nosy. It's like you have a nosy life. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best part is it keeps you alert and observant and responsive.
And making up stories about other people.
Oh, yeah. And right. And slanderous.
Slanderous stories. What's the worst part about being a writer?
Writing.
Kind of saw that one coming, but I thought I'd follow through. But anyway, what's the best writing job you had?
Well, you know, when you get a contract to write, you know, I think a lot of what I write is on creative ways and loving ways to teach. That just happened because, you know, I thought education was getting so grim and people getting so uptight and test-driven and that I just wrote a lot of articles to say celebrate teachers and keep them strong so they don't lose their connection with the kids and don't get overwhelmed. So a lot of my joyful writing has been, you know, just for instance, I wrote an article about my puppet Snowball called My Puppet is on Ritalin. You know, I mean, I love titles. And if I get a good title, I will just, you know, just go on it. I have a few good titles. What was the title? I just forgot. It's such a good title. I have to remember because
right,
you got to write it down. Everywhere are notes.
Okay. What's the worst writing job you had? What's the most difficult?
To me, writing textbooks. I'm not a textbook writer, but I've written like six. And that whole thing with editing and that whole thing with resources and research and footnotes and you know, and really keep into, you know, and you have an editor who's being, I'll give you a very good example. This is really going to blame. I have three editions of my early childhood book, Creative Experiences for Young Children. And I think about the second edition, they wanted to do a chapter on food, you know, young children and food. And I just didn't want to do it. I absolutely did not want to do it. I didn't want to do it.
So you didn't want to talk about food?
I could see it fitting in, but it wasn't exciting to me. It wasn't like, wow. Anyway, so my editor, I had a block. I absolutely blocked. And he had a deadline, you know. And he's calling me from New York going, how is the food chapter going? I hate it. I don't want to do it. Do I have to? So anyway, he says, you have to. We want you to do blah, blah, blah. This is hardcore Brace. Then they went out of the business about 10 years later, and I think it's because of me. But anyway, so I was really upset about it. And I said, I know I have to do it. I just don't want to. So I'm taking a walk with my dogs in the neighborhood. And I'm walking with a neighbor. And she's talking about words. And she says, you know, words are so interesting. Well, yes, they are. I'm working with my dogs, blah, 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 blah. She says, for instance, she says, take the word bread. What's the word? Oh, my God. It's an eating word with bread. Oh, so she said, take the word company. She said, do you know what company means? I said, well, with come. And she says, you know what company means? With bread. And I stood in the street with my dogs and I said, what does it mean? She said, with bread. And I said, I burst into tears. She's like, oh my God, what did I just say? And her tears were flowing down my face. This is a true story. She says, what happened? I said, I didn't realize that company meant with bread. Oh my God, I can write my chapter. And I was crying in the street. She's told the whole neighborhood, do not take a walk with him.
Or at least, anyway, don't mention bread.
But that opened the door. And that was a bad, you know, it's a good experience at the end of that. But sometimes you get blocked. But mostly I've written what I've wanted to, so it isn't like other people telling you. But in that case, it was, and it was really hard.
Mm-hmm. What would you do if you weren't a writer?
I do what I'm doing anyway. I'm a teacher, I'm a dancer, I'm a rabble-rouser, I'm a lobbyist. But I can't imagine not writing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, Doug, you're a writer. Can you imagine just, or you're a music maker. Can you imagine your life?
I'm mostly told what to write.
So. Oh, okay. What would you do if you weren't told what to write?
Sleep. What genre haven't you written that you'd like to try?
Well, it isn't that I haven't tried, but I am such, my love is fiction. And mostly, over the years, I've got novels, I've got short stories, I have many short stories published over the years. But as I said, the last 35 years is a lot education stuff. Not boring. I mean, I have some really good, you know, I have one article that I just called as a joke, Oi, Education. As I sent it out, and I thought they were going to call me, young man, we got to get a new title. So here is this prestigious journal, Oi, Education. So I love titles, but fiction, I've just missed writing. I'm just chomping at the bit to go back to fiction.
Okay. So what's your idea for the next fiction
book?
Well,
I've got a book I started. I'm two-thirds through with it, but I had to stop it to do the third edition of the early childhood book, and that got me back to all the education. So I may rework it. It's like a middle school teenage novel called Next Best Friend. Okay.
The one that interrupted the writing, was this the same one with the food chapter? Did you get a chance to edit the food chapter again?
No. It's not even the food chapter. I don't even think it's in this last. Okay. It may be included. I don't even think. Because I really rewrote the whole book.
Okay. Well, who is your biggest influence?
Well, you know, celebrating young children and their teachers, I acknowledge everyone I ever met my whole life. You know that one. I thank everyone.
But going back to that earlier exercise, no inanimate object.
Yeah, right.
It has to be a person.
It has to be a real person.
Okay,
or something. But, you know, You know, you were a kid and you read Little Women and Louisa May Alcott, you know, as corny as that can be now with vampires now sucking the blood out of teenagers, you know. But I loved Little Women and I was writing then. And of course, Jo March was my sister. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the early, you know, the Tree Grows in Brooklyn, Franny sitting in the library or sucking on her suckers every Saturday on her little fire escape in Brooklyn. I mean, your early reading that just had you fall in love. I do the library programs in the summer, too. I do about 11 this summer. And just to get the kids to love the reading, and the reading will inspire you to say, I want to be writing.
Have you picked up anybody new? Are you a J.K. Rowling fan, or is that too...
I started reading with one of the grandchildren, and they're in love with it. I mean, it's either the kids are in love with that, or I have one grandson who is like your nonfiction. He's a nonfiction grandson. His brother is a complete fantasy, and my oldest one is like this. You know, the minute he starts, like, you know, Harry Potter or, you know, Twilight, my oldest is, you know, he's reading like the biography of Theodore Roosevelt, you know, that's what he's reading, you know. Okay. So I think those fantasies are really not my, you know, I like the fairy tales, I like the legends, I love the legends. I mean, when I see, you know, like Little Mermaid ending happily in Walt Disney, and I hate to break it to my kids because they love the Little Mermaid, you know, in the actual story, we are not too happy at the ending. Not a good happy ending.
I understand there's a different ending at the Hunchback of Notre Dame, too.
Oh, I think they did.
The
they changed it.
Different somehow.
I don't know why they would pick the Hunchback for a children. Can you figure that one out?
It made sense to somebody in marketing, I guess.
I mean, how about the city mouse and the country mouse? You know, let's do something like not as invasive.
What book is on your nightstand right now?
My daughter just sent me the Pete Seeger biography that just came. I just went to Pete Seeger's bash in New York. He's turned 90. And this one book that a book that I just read and I've been recommending to everyone is called The Book Thief. Have you read The Book Thief?
Oh,
it's just powerful and very unique and very gripping. The Book Thief. So I recommend it to my sister who called and said, I have not been as affected by a book in years as that book. She says, I cannot get it out of my... I won't tell you what it's about. The Book Thief.
I'm guessing there's some theft of books.
Yeah.
What's your secret vice of an author or a genre?
My secret what, hon?
Secret vice.
Oh, procrastination.
Okay.
It's not a secret.
It's public vice.
Irresponsibility. Okay. All my secrets are public.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. Your program is June 24th at the Rife Gallery with pre-registration available at rifegallery.org. And I encourage people to go to the program and learn more about new narratives coming by Ohio artists. Right, thanks very much.
Thank you, dear.